Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. What is up? My name is Curtis, and I'm just your typical Spike. On the line with me, sporting a, would we call that a periwinkle V-neck?
I think so, yeah, yeah. Sky blue.
Sky blue. You're somewhere in there. But my good buddy and producer extraordinaire, MTG Orange Belt, Cameron McCoy. What's up, friend?
I know it's spring because like the allergies are just weighing down on me right now. So I'm a little, I don't know, drugged up on like all the allergy medications that I have. So I apologize if this is the most boring Cameron that you've ever heard.
Well, I'm a little drugged up on spoilers, man. All kinds of new cards to talk about. But first, we'll lead off with our weeks. Both you and I were confined to MTGO. So how'd that go for you, man?
Yeah, so I don't know if we told the podcast yet or not, but we are both going to that Valhalla Games again here in less than a month for a win a Black Lotus instead of a win a Mox, which is pretty awesome. It's huge. But anyway, just trying to figure out, like, I guess I already know I'm going to be playing Stoneblade. That's like not a question, but it's just kind of refining and tweaking the sideboard, you know, like all these like little flex spots that I have within the deck as far as what do I want to do for this Win a Lotus. And so I played a Legacy League and played an Esper Stoneblade list that I found online, and I'm not totally in love with it. It's running like one Painful Truth, which, you know, it's a decent card, but it just, that doesn't seem to be the right spot. So I wish I had something interesting to say. I went 2-3. Trying to play on a Tuesday morning during a Legacy League is murder. There's so few people out there that just starting a league is not that interesting. It takes forever, I should say. And so it doesn't make for that interesting of a morning or whatever. But, okay, so Miracles played another two freaking Miracles players. And, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about this if we talk about the SCG Worcester that's going on right now. But, I really don't think it's top. That's the problem. I think it's the one mana Wrath. Like, it's just way too good.
I'm down with taking anything out of that deck. Like at this point,
right?
Like I think the semantics of arguing whatever card, like I just don't know what it'll take for people to hear that it's definitely the best deck in the format, and it's been for a long time, not just a little bit. I mean, we've been banging this drum for a year and a half on this show, you know. But yeah, that's in my experience, that's almost unwinnable if you're an Esper Stoneblade player.
I think the only reason Bug has such an advantage is because of Liliana and the discard effect, and yeah, they're just running more discard, which, and they're also running more land destruction, which can help, I think. But
well, Leovold also really helps them.
Oh, for sure. Now it does, for sure. Yeah. So like, you know, there's routes, but I mean, like, it's just a joke when I have like a meddling mage trying to stop the, you know, the Miracled card or whatever, and it doesn't matter. I mean, like, they have like a Pyroblast or something else to get rid of it if they need to. So, you know, that was the day. So, I mean, it was okay, but yeah, just kind of still building and trying to fine tune and tweak what I want to play for this Win a Lotus.
So are you thinking about the spirits variation, or is that still,
you know, I was kind of thinking about that, but I just don't think it's tuned yet in the way that, like, this, what I'm playing is essentially the Shaheen Serrani Esper Stoneblade, and it seems to be the most tuned. It seems to put up the most results, and it's the one that I'm most comfortable playing right now. So that's the direction I'll be going for sure, I think.
Yeah, and the tragic thing is, like, if you can dodge Miracles, you have a good matchup against the rest of the best decks in the format right now. Eldrazi, it depends. I mean, that's something that, you know, they can kill you super fast. You might have a Wrath online, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, things like Grixis Delver, for example, I think you are very well suited to fight that battle, you know? So I also played some MTGO. So, Cameron, the throwback standard gauntlet, which was Mirage Tempest Era standard, which I played heavily. I played heavily with 3 to 4 other guys at my high school. You know, there was no F&M. Mm-hmm. There was like, we read Inquest magazine. We talked cards. We built decks. We played against each other in these formats. And I knew of some of these decks, you know, but not all of them. So for those of you who don't know it, there are 8 different decks and you spend your money, you get into it, and you end up with one of these decks randomly. I played it twice. So look, this is old Magic. This is not fair Magic. This is Magic where the hosers are real. So for example, I lost one match because I was mono blue and my opponent cast Boil and one sided destroyed all my islands. You know,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. These are things that happen in old Magic, right? The White Weenie deck plays 4 of Cataclysm, which is you choose a land, creature, artifact, enchantment, everything else goes away. And so they can play, you know, one guy, put Imperial Armor on him, which gives them flying, and +1/+1 for each planes, and then the next turn it's Cataclysm. You're out. It's over. Right? So there is that element of kind of unfairness. The swings are a little bit more wild, and I really like that. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So just for reference, I ended up with the mono blue. We talked about this deck like a while ago. I think you played it at an event in your shop, but the Rainbow Efreet 20 some odd counterspell deck.
Oh my gosh. Yes, totally.
Which, if you're a control player, like it's a little too pure. It's a little too strong.
I was going to say, it's like...
like
yeah, pure is the best way to put it.
Everything else you do in Magic that week is not going to be good enough. Right? It just isn't going to be because you have these matches where you literally can counter everything. And then if they don't cast something, you play Whispers of the Muse, which is a 1-mana cycler. But if you buy it back with 5, you can do that over and over again. And then you might be able to counter, I don't know, 13 spells in a game. And it feels really good. And then I ended up with the Tempo Ophidian mono blue deck. So that deck is not nearly as good. In fact, it's a worse version of the same deck. And with the Rainbow Free deck, I went 2-1. And then the other one, I went 1-2. So I went 3-3 between all of them. But here's the thing. Luck of the draw was really on my side. I was very happy that I ended up with both of those decks. WotC did not do a good job. I don't know why they feel like they have to have 8 decks. Because if you look at the list, some of the decks are really bad. There's a mono black aggro deck. And I watched 2 streamers play it. One of them, I think it was Paul Cheon, quit before it was over because the deck is just that underpowered compared to the competition. And then you could end up with the Survival of the Fittest deck, which in terms of the power curve is way beyond what some of these other decks can do. But here's where it's really frustrating. Why is this $10? It's $10, Cameron. It's $10 to play 3 matches. $10. $10.
$10.
$10.
Yeah.
You don't choose the deck you end up with. You could have spent $10 and ended up with mono black Carnifage .deck.
Yeah.
And
so what are you getting out of it? Like, what do you get out of this by other than playing for the enjoyment?
You get play points, bro. Play points. Those hot, sweet play points. Now, look, you have to go 3-0 to profit. If you are 2-1, you just break even. Okay? Now, look, I have a big issue with Magic Online's economy, right? But with these, like, I think you can make the argument with like a standard thing having a more traditional prize structure, right? That makes sense.
Yeah.
But where this doesn't make sense is casual events like this. You're trying to get people to play this that did not play it. First of all, it's in the limited queues. Not even kidding. So I couldn't find them at first. To me, throwback standard gauntlet with constructed decks should be in the constructed room. But whatever. Secondly, you have to play this weird Russian roulette. And then you play 3 matches. You don't even get... like it, with a draft, you at least get to draft the cards as well. But in this, it's very feasible that you lose $10 in under 45 minutes. Okay? Now, let me just throw this by you. This is because what happens is it's such a feel bad, right? I love these decks, and so that's why I played them. Like, I was alive for most of these cards, and I knew what they did. But for you, there's no rational reason why you would ever, ever, ever do this standard throwback gauntlet, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no nostalgia.
Right. They need to and the psychology of it is just so bad from a game theory standpoint, right? How does Hearthstone get you in? They say, hey, man, here's a free draft. Hey, there's a quest. Hey, if you complete this quest, you're going to get X cards. Right? So let me just paint a scenario for you, Cameron. They say, hey, if you do the throwback standard gauntlet 3 times at $3 or $4 a piece, who knows? At the end of it, at the end of the week, you get one non-tradable, whatever's $12, a Bayou. You would do that, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah. Yeah. Why not? Why wouldn't you?
Right? And that's the psychology. I mean, guys, if there is a one non-tradable, eternal playable card on the line, I would have probably done it 2 or 3 times, maybe 4, right? And instead of getting just play points out of me, you would have had me spending in to get something back out. They have just completely lost that psychology on Magic Online, whereas things, not just like Hearthstone or Overwatch, but even something like Destiny says, hey, the more you engage, the more we're going to give you for being there. And that makes you want to spend more money, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not a bad thing. Instead, we have this weird pseudo-gambling structure. And it's incredibly harmful for things like Cube, for throwback standard, throwback gauntlets, old draft formats. These legacy, and I don't mean legacy as a format, I mean old formats, are a product that you can only utilize digitally, and they only serve a casual purpose. Engage your gaming audience with it. God, this is so frustrating.
Yeah, man.
Right? Because instead of whatever, 400 people were in that league when I was in it, it could be 3,000. Mm-hmm. But instead, we have this incredibly aggressive cost structure, and you're not getting anybody new. You're just not. And Cameron, I don't know about you, how many young people play at your store, but that's starting to happen at my shop. Guess what they all do? They play Hearthstone.
Hearthstone. Yeah. It's on your phone.
It's on your phone, A. And guess how much it cost them?
Like next to nothing, right?
Next to nothing, right? And so what they'll do is they'll ask for a gift card from grandma, right? And that's how they put their money into Hearthstone every once in a while. But if you don't have a amount of disposable income or something wrong with you mentally like you and I do, that we just are hooked into Magic and so we're like, oh, I guess I got to pay. And then you had to pay $12 for the Legacy League, right? This has just been an incredibly... I know I've gone on this tangent multiple times, but it really bothered me this week. Why everybody keeps harping on the interface and all these other problems when the number one problem with Magic Online is the cost, and it continues to be, and you're not growing your product. And with stuff like this, like I don't know why it costs this much for a standard throwback. Mm-hmm. Like it should be $4. Like I get nothing back out of it. I don't know. It's just silliness, man. So Cameron, let's talk about spoilers. I'm very frustrated with this clearly, and I need to take a break.
No, it's actually good. It's really good.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, man, we'll be right back. All right, Cameron, I've calmed down from my tangent. I apologize for going on so long about it. We got to get to spoilers. So we're going to jump right in, and I'll always give our forewarning. First of all, we do not get through every card. Every set, there's at least one really good tournament card that we just somehow miss.
Normally
the best one. Seahanger, Backwalker. And then we have what we like to think of as a 50% accuracy, almost on the money. Sometimes we're very right, sometimes we're very wrong, but we like to encourage the discussion. And we always like to talk about these in terms of all the major formats. EDH, we're not going to cover, but I've been told there's a lot of EDH stuff in this set. So, Cameron, why don't you lead us off with the new Gideon, man?
Yeah, we have Gideon of the Trials. He is a Gideon Planeswalker, cost 1 white-white with a loyalty starting out at 3. +1 until your next turn, prevent all damage target permanent would deal. You can pay 0 until end of turn. Gideon Trials becomes a 4/4 human soldier creature with indestructible. That's still a planeswalker. Prevent all damage that would be dealt to him this turn. And then lastly, we have, you get an emblem with as long as you control Gideon Planeswalker. As long as you control a Gideon Planeswalker, you can't lose the game and your opponent cannot win the game. So it's a Platinum Angel for zero on the loyalty there. Interesting. Interesting card. I mean, it seems like I don't know what deck this is going to fit in. If this is like a snap into the Mardu vehicles, if this is playing some number of these with other Gideon as well, the four mana Gideon. But to me, it seems like you would just snap go to the zero loyalty counter to, you can't lose the game, right? I mean, that seems like a really powerful, it can be a powerful effect. And it seems like you can just kind of maybe then play this like slower control game if this, or if you're playing against another Mardu vehicles deck, having something like this, you know, can slow that deck down. And I don't know, it could be an interesting mirror card, I guess.
So we definitely agree that this is a very good standard card. And what's really weird is, so originally, Gideon Ally of Zendikar was supposed to be rotated out when this guy showed up. Mm-hmm. Now that's not going to happen. I still think Gideon Ally of Zendikar is probably a better card.
Yeah.
But especially in terms of standard, just because you're producing card advantage, whereas this isn't necessarily. The interesting discussion is this in terms of older formats, right? So we've been asked, like, through Twitter and stuff, like, what do we think of this in older formats? Right from the shoot, Legacy seems like it's a no-go. There's just too many ways, because the permanent has to be in play. You just get killed out of nowhere too much in Legacy by either multiple permanents or, you know, the more interesting application, I think, is in Modern, where it's like you could name something like Valakut, but the Valakut has to be in play. So it's interesting. I think Ruined Halo probably is just better in that spot, right? But look, in terms of standard, he's a 3-mana 4/4 indestructible.
Yeah.
That's pretty okay. Right?
Really good. Yeah.
So the thing that hangs over all of our standard discussion, and I feel like I'm going to say this a lot, the current decks are so powerful that it either fits into those slots or isn't good enough. Mm-hmm. But if things get banned, like Felidar Guardian, like Heart of Kirin, which I think at this point we could make a pretty strong argument that they should be, that changes all these evaluations in such an excessive way that, like, I don't know what will happen, you know. And they might just ban it. Like, if they ban Gideon and Ally of Zendikar, that is like Zendikar rotated, right?
Right. But, yeah. Yeah.
I think he's good. I don't know that he's going to be great. Standard is also very creature centric, so they might just kill the Gideon, and then your emblem means nothing,
right?
You know.
Yeah.
So I want to read Liliana, Death's Majesty. It's 3BB for a 5 loyalty Planeswalker Liliana. +1, create a 2/2 black zombie creature token. Put the top 2 cards of your library into your graveyard. -3, return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. That creature is a black zombie in addition to other colors and types. -7, destroy all non-zombie creatures. So Cameron, first blush, what do you think of this guy? Or gal, I should say.
Yeah, you know, okay. I don't know. I guess I should give her higher marks than I normally do, because like I was not really up on the last Liliana, the 3-mana one that is actually really, really good. I thought it was okay. This one just seems okay, but who knows? It's probably going to just like destroy Legacy as a format because it's so good. All her utility seems pretty good. It seems like it would fit pretty well into some sort of like Esper or Mardu control deck, maybe a blue-black control deck. I think she's just okay. The 5-mana casting cost is a little steep, but you know, there's some power there. And I mean, let's be honest, being able to just wrath the board on her third turn is pretty good too, right? So
yeah, I'm also just kind of mad. Like, again, it's weird because we can name all these planeswalkers, and it's getting to the point where you should always evaluate the casting cost first, but it's almost like the casting cost dictates much more when it comes to planeswalkers because of where they land in terms of the timeline of the game. Because these abilities are all powerful. However, the 5-mana planeswalker bar is really high. Really, really high. The 5-mana Nissa, I would argue, is a very good card. Doesn't see hardly any play. Sure. Better than this. And I can't make an argument for why you should play this over Obnixilis. You know, Obnixilis has been occasionally a one of in some of these decks, and I think he's just ability for ability a better card, right? He just comes down and kills a guy, and often you can get a 2 or 3 for 1 out of him. Whereas this, it seems like sometimes you're just going to get a 2 for 1, and if it is just 5 mana, create a 2/2, mill yourself to, and then she dies. That's not good. That's not good enough for standard for sure. at all. So
I will say, though, I mean, like, the -3 ability, like, we can't discard that, right? I mean, the ability to just put in whatever giant creature card, you know, like an 11/11 Ulamog or something like that, seems like it could be pretty good as well. So, I mean, there's at least that going for her. Like, I mean, that's a very powerful effect where maybe she is in, like, some sort of rock deck, you know?
Yeah, I mean, in Unburial Rites saw a little play, but that was also with Sun Titan, with the 3-mana Liliana of the Veil. So there's a lot of things that have to go right. And again, this might be a planeswalker that is really good 2 sets down the line. But right now, as standard's currently configured, I just can't imagine a scenario where she is playable. Like, I just don't think she's good enough. So, hey, you wanted to put Champion of Rhonus.
Rhonus, I guess.
The old Jackal Warrior. which, you know, what's funny is that was actually your nickname in college, the Jackal Warrior.
Yeah, it was, so right? Yeah.
I can see why you like this card. So, Cameron, why don't you go over it for us?
Yeah, Champion Rhonus, it's a Jackal Warrior that costs 3 and a green with a power and toughness of 3/3. You may exert, Champion Rhonus as it attacks. When you do, you may put a creature card from your hand onto the battlefield. So, you know, if you can get to the point where you can attack and exert with this creature, you're getting a show and tell effect, which is pretty huge. And I mean, I don't know what deck this would actually fit in, but it seems like it could have interesting application in something like, some sort of green based deck in Modern. Like, I mean, we don't really have like a show and tell type of effect. I mean, obviously you have to get there first. Like, what? Yeah.
I think Amulet would be the closest thing because you could actually play this guy somewhat early. And then, you know, I think if you were to, so first of all, I think this guy is fringe Modern playable, but that ability is certainly powerful. When we've seen it before, like on Elvish Piper, it's an activated ability, right? But this is, in theory, if you're able to give him haste, or you can just play him on the battlefield, and then they have to deal with him right away. There's a lot of room here to do something. The 4 mana is a lot in Modern. Let's get that out of the way.
Having a 3-power toughness, I mean, a lightning bolt done, right? So, yeah.
But, I mean, there is a certain category of decks that this will work against, right? We're not talking about any of the hyper-aggressive stuff, but, like, if you're able to play him on turn 3 or turn 2 or whatever, you know, and then exert out an Emrakul, like, that's pretty good. Yeah. That's okay. So just keep your eye on this guy. I think he'll be a 50-cent rare, right? And then one day he'll get busted. But, I mean, Amulet, I mean, can you think of another thing? I mean,
No, that's the thing is, like, I can't think of something. Maybe it's some sort of elf. Like, that's the thing is, like, it doesn't even really fit into an elves deck. But, I mean, I just love the idea of being able to cheat into play a Progenitus or something like that. It's just, getting there is the issue. So, I don't know. Interesting card, I would say.
Yeah, for sure. Now, let's talk about the one that's really a head-scratcher, and that is As Foretold. 2 and a blue for an enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, put a time counter on As Foretold. Once each turn, you may pay 0 rather than pay the mana cost for a spell you cast with converted mana cost X or less, where X is the number of time counters on As Foretold. So we're talking about this in terms of older formats, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's standard. It's unlikely that it's going to be good enough. Because there's not even any real good counter spells. But let's talk about this in terms of modern specifically. How would you use this, Cameron?
I'm thinking of something like a Ancestral Vision is the thing that you're going to be using this with, right? I mean, something like that where you may pay zero. That means that, like you said before, any of those suspended cards come into play, or you can cast those for zero, right? Mm-hmm. So that is a huge, huge thing where, you know, I mean, we've tried to do this with like Goblin Dark Dwellers or with, you know, the Gear Hulk, but just being able to have an enchantment where you have a card in hand and you can cast it for zero, that is huge. So it seems like it would fit into some sort of control deck. It's just what type of control deck is that going to be in modern, where I feel like this might have some application. Maybe it is in Legacy. I don't know. But I really like the idea of putting this into something like the Turns deck or the Walks deck or whatever it's called, where you just have a whole bunch of time walk effects and this just nets you even three more cards, right? I mean, or whatever it could do if you're using Ancestral. So that seems like it could be pretty good in that sort of context.
Right. So, this is the card that I've gotten the most excited about for control in a while. Now, I know a lot of people are like, well, you slam it on turn three and then you're dead. First of all, don't get wrapped up in the whole, you have to play this on turn three, right? The problem with control decks in modern is, I mean, you could clean up things early a ton. Now, sometimes you die on turn two because you go colonnade, and they kill Infinity.
Yeah, yeah.
But the other problem is like, and I think every control player has lived through this, where you sweep the board one time and then you have nothing going on. You have to like try and hit your one out of Sphinx's Rev or play Think Twice, and there's just not a density of things going on, whereas this creates a lot of late game for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you can hold up a counter spell and a colonnade activation suddenly, right? Or you can hold up Path. Now, obviously it's fragile to Abrupt Decay, right? But that's like the only spell that, you know, incidentally hits this in modern. Nobody else is playing like Kasali Pride Mage or something like that, right? It is, so in control, I think it's really interesting. And there are a number of matchups where, again, you don't necessarily want to slam it on turn three, but against some of the decks you can, right? Mm-hmm. And then it gives you a lot of extra utility. But combo decks as well, man. So
yeah.
You can 3-mana Restore Balance, 3-mana Living End. Like, there is a ton of stuff going on with this card. It is basically Aether Vial for spells. And that's scary, man. That's a very, very, very scary thing to say, because you end up so much mana if you use this over the course of a game, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And I'd have to look at the rules. I don't know how this would work with Sphinx's Rev, but I believe that you can, whatever X is, you can just go for it, right? And whereas something like Brain in a Jar, you had to have the exact CMC. Now you can, you know, play this out. Let's say it gets up to three counters. Oh, I draw an Ancestral Visions. I'll just draw three for free.
Right?
Right? Yeah. Like, okay, whatever. And then pass to you. Oh, wait, I have a Remand that I'm just going to, you know, it is, once you get ahead with this card, and I don't think it's a win more. I think it's a card that could put those decks over the top. But again, Living End and Restore Balance, you can just play Gemstone Mines or Mana Confluence or whatever to just add blue it, and you just do it, right? So it's a very, very good card. Cameron, one of my pet cards from the set, Regal Caracal.
Yeah, Regal Caracal is a cat creature with power toughness of 3/3 that costs 3 colorless and a white. Other cats you control get a +1/+1 and have lifelink. When Regal Caracal enters the battlefield, create 2/1/1 white cat creature tokens with lifelink. This is just a value card. I mean, there's just so much value built into this card. I mean, you're getting a 3/3 body. And, you know, it has the Lord effect, which is really, really cool, where other cat creatures you have can get +1/+1. So that means those two white cat creatures you have are now 2/2 cats. I don't know. I think we finally have a cat deck. This, yes. A Johnny. I mean, what's stopping you?
Well, also, I mean, we did get an additional camel.
Whoa. Yeah, we forgot to talk about that. Yeah.
We did get... Well, it feels weird without Dustin. Can we just say that? Yeah. But he's the camel enthusiast. But there was also a camel in... Was it RTR?
What was that?
There was...
This is our third camel, right?
There was another camel, creature subtype camel. So, I mean, we won't be truly happy until there are masterpieces, the camel collection. So...
Next set,
next set. I mean, maybe it would take a while, but let's say we just print 4 camels per set, just ballpark number. That's not a lot to ask. You're going to get there pretty quick. But back to cats, okay?
Yeah, man.
So Regal Caracal, I've heard so many people just dismiss this card. And again, current standard, blah, 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 we don't know. But not just because of the cat pump ability, but flashing this guy with Regal Caracal is pretty okay, right?
You get
more cats that way. But look, dude, Cloud Goat Ranger was the thing. you were getting 3 bodies and 7 power for 5 mana, 7 lifelink power, right? So if there's an aggressive red deck down the line, this card is going to be, come on, just get me to the Regal character. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is the cats don't lose lifelink when the Lord goes away, right?
Yeah.
So... Yeah. There is a lot to like here. There are some aggressive red cards in this set, so maybe mono red will creep its way back into standard down the line. The Soul Scar Mage, which we're not going to talk about, is kind of the 1/2, you know, prowess for 1 mana guy. But I like this card a lot. There's a lot of value built in, and I think maybe people, oh, it's a cat lord, blah, blah, blah. Who cares, man? You're getting a bunch of bodies for very little effort.
It feels kind of like, what was that, Wingmate Rock that came out like maybe 2 or 3, 4 sets ago now? Mm. It's been a while now, but like it just has a lot of value built into it where, in fact, I think this card is better. But yeah, I really do think like if maybe down the road there could be, I'm not joking, I think maybe somebody will get a cat deck going in Modern. And it might be semi-aggressive and decent.
Cameron, keep your daydreams off the air, man. I don't.
Sorry.
I can't turn down your mic because you're the producer. But if you ever utter cat deck again, I'm firing you. You can go produce for some other show. Like, what in the world, man? It's a good card, though. All right. I'm going to talk about Kefna. This will be Kefnet, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Isn't Kefka the bad guy from Final Fantasy VI? I don't know. Whatever. Point is, we've got some gods in this set. They work a lot differently than the Theros gods. And looking back, I liked the Theros gods. I think they were one of the more interesting aspects of the set. However, because everything was so oriented around being monocolor, we didn't get to see almost any of the gold ones. I think the green Kuranos? No. So Kuranos sees modern play, but didn't see standard play. And then the green-red one, he was a one-of in green-red monsters. But otherwise,
that's right.
We just saw the mono-blue god. And then the mono-black god was in the sideboard. But we didn't see as many as we would have liked, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Kefnet the Mindful is 2 and a blue for a legendary creature god. It's 5/5, flying indestructible. He can't attack or block unless you have 7 or more cards in hand. 3 and a blue, draw a card, you may return a land you control to its owner's hand. So, Cameron, what do you think, buddy?
Oh, you know, more than anything, this card is getting me hopeful for the set that they're kind of going back to form with the colors, right? Like, we're getting a blue card where it wants you to always have card advantage, wants you to be drawing a lot of cards. And so... I don't know. Like, that gives me hope. However, this card just seems like it's kind of garbage. Maybe I'm wrong, but I mean, it has some very powerful effects to it. I mean, drawing a card is great, but I don't know. I just don't think that this card is what you're looking for. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this is the top end that you're that a blue-white control deck is going to have, and we're finally going to see like blue-white control come back. But yeah, this card just seems okay.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you look a couple over at Drakehaven, that seems more like a deck a control or a card a control deck would want. Mm-hmm. You know, which basically that's two and a blue for an enchantment. Whenever you cycle or discard a card, you pay one. If you do, you get a 2/2 flying Drake. That's the kind of card that you want in a control deck. Whereas Kefnet, while it is possible to that it will be good, it requires a very narrow set of things to occur that are very unlikely in my, from my perspective. I mean, the fact that it's got to be seven or more cards, when you're a control deck, that's tough to maintain, you know? And I just don't see, like, granted, the ability is fine, but it's just not good enough. Now, we would be having a different discussion if it said it can't attack, but it could still block. That would be a different thing. But again, the incredibly huge mistake that our vehicles hangs over us constantly. Like, I can't imagine paying three mana for a do-nothing card while I'm getting smacked in the face by Heart of Kieran. Like, just a terrible idea, right? So I'm pretty down on this guy as well. So, Cameron, we've seen more of the set. Liking, disliking?
Overall, I'm positive. I have tempered expectations, but it, like I said before, this seems like it's moving more. It's returning to form in some ways, and you know, I like the new Liliana. I think it's cool. I like the new Gideon. If that's the direction that this set is going, which it seems like it is, count me in. I'm liking it.
Yeah, a little bit more mid-rangey. I'm liking it so far too. My one kind of is the new split cards, which you can only cast the top half one way and then the other way from the graveyard. Now, what's nice is because of the way they're formatted, you don't have to do that awkward thing where a split card's in your hand and you're rereading it real quick. And it's like, clearly I'm reading a split card. but they're fine. I like the new... Are you aware of the new split card ruling?
Yeah, so that actually has a kind of an effect on Miracles with, like, when they're playing a Wear Tear, right? I mean, that seems good. I can't remember the specific ruling, though.
Basically, right? Yeah. So Wear Tears, converted mana cost is three now at all times. Yeah. So, I mean... which is basically what you would have expected it to be. The thing it hurts is there's this one modern deck that was playing a bunch of the new, you can play something from your hand with converted mana cost three or less, and was playing the split fuse cards. And so that deck, well, I mean, if you've been on Magic Online, you probably run into it once or twice. I played it against it a time, and it was really good. But that deck's basically nuked now. Shenanigans with Boom Bust are kind of over. But I think for the majority of Magic players, we're just like, whatever, okay. I mean, yeah. it also makes more sense.
It really does, right? Yeah.
Than it did before. So anyway, Cameron, that's spoilers for us this week. Let's get out of this segment, come back, and talk about what we've been doing this week. All right, Cameron, just a little bit of a different vibe today because, you know, normally we would talk about video games, but you and I are kind of talking about the same games. Like, so we're going to go a little off script and you're going to talk about comics. Now, I want to just mention this. You're still very much in love with your Switch, right?
Oh, yeah, I'm very much in love with it. I mean, it's like this great thing where I love that it's portable. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how many hours I've sunk into Zelda now, but it's quite a bit. And yeah, the Switch is great. Obviously, the one thing I'm wanting right now, I think everybody else is like, what happens after Zelda? You know, because like there's Mario Kart, which I've already played. So I'm really hopeful to find some like maybe digital download, smaller games that are portable and maybe indie, that sort of thing. So I'm hopeful for those to come out soon.
I don't know for a fact, but I've read somewhere that a bunch of Neo Geo games have been re-released, and that's what people are using to tide themselves over is like getting through the metal slugs and all that.
Nice. Yeah. So anyway, Switch is great. I can't recommend that system enough. The only thing the graphics are, it's not, it's like a non-factor to me. Like, it doesn't matter because the quality of the game is so good and the portable console is so good. Just a battery. That's like the only thing I can say that has marks going against it for being a truly portable system.
Mm-hmm. Awesome, man.
Okay, so why in the world does DC Comics not have a digital subscription service the way that Marvel does?
I have no idea, man. It's terrible. Every day I think this. Every day.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I'm in love with my Marvel subscription. I've been rereading, like, just a Bendis Ultimate Spider-Man run. Like, I read that a long time ago and just kind of revisiting that, and that's super good. And there's some, like, gems, some very good classic stories of Spider-Man in there that are really, really good. Anyway, go to my comic book shop, and I'm like, I want to read some DC stuff. Like, I still love my Batman, Superman, and whatnot. But there is one comic that I've been really wanting to check out lately, and it's nowhere to be found except in singles, and that is the new Snagglepuss comic.
Okay.
Have you heard of this?
Well, I know that DC's repurposed a bunch of Hanna-Barbera stuff to varying degrees. Yeah. Flintstones has gotten quite a bit of critical acclaim as well, but go ahead.
Okay. So Snagglepuss, he is a playwright in the vein of somebody like Tennessee Williams. He has a buddy named Huckleberry Hound who's very much like William Faulkner. I have, you know, an English background in my going to grad school and whatnot, and so I read a lot of Tennessee Williams plays. I've read almost everything that Faulkner has ever produced, right? Mm. And to see this in a comic is really, really cool. But then to have it be like Snagglepuss, a Hanna-Barbera character, and like I'm like reading this and like that's really poignant and very, very interesting is incredible. So I've only gotten the first issue right now. I'm in love with it. I'm actually thinking about just picking up the singles because I really, really, really want to do this. And it just seems so counterintuitive to pick up singles when I have this Marvel Unlimited subscription where I'm just like voraciously consuming comics. And it's actually really hard as a comic book reader when you just can like binge for like 2 weeks on like an entire run of something and to like put on the brakes and it's like, okay, you're only going to be getting like one comic every 4 weeks. Man, I didn't realize how much of a transition that would be. And so, like, DC Comics, if you're out there, please, 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 please give me your catalog online. I'd be willing to pay $15 a month for it.
Oh, dude, it is such a frighteningly bad missed opportunity. I mean, if you search DC Comics Unlimited, like, how many people have written articles about why they should do this, why they don't do it? And apparently it's just not their business model. Like, okay, they are much more into selling trades. And while I get that, I mean, they could have a cutoff that is completely, because you could make the argument that maybe Marvel Unlimited starts too recently and that impacts their sales. Mm-hmm. But DC, they could set theirs, you know, starting 10 years ago and before or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
They could actually just do it by character. Like, they could just sell me just a Batman subscription for Batman comics, and I would pay that, like, happily. Like, please take my money. It's so incredibly frustrating, especially. So last week, DC had a sale on Comixology where a bunch of the Rebirth stuff was 99 cents an issue.
So
I picked a bunch of the first issues up. Flash, fantastic. Hal Jordan at the Green Lantern Corps. Awesome, you know, and I mean,
really well written right now.
Yeah, they're just knocking it out of the park, and I know a lot of people like, I like Scott Snyder Batman, but I don't love it. But I mean, I believe his Batman book is the number one selling book every month right now. So hey, you know, they're doing a great job over there, and it's kind of the talk of the comic books community is how badly they're drumming Marvel, which, you know, and we talked a little bit about this last week, but like, you know, 10 years ago, or maybe 15 years ago, to think that X-Men would not be the top-selling book would have been insanity.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. And boy, the times they have changed. X-Men can barely keep afloat.
Yeah. You know?
Hey, I just wanted to talk very quickly, Cameron. So here's what I did. I went on a full 1997, 1996 trip this week. I did the Mirage Tempest Standard, and immediately after I finished, I got out my Sega Saturn. I'm a terrible retro gamer. Like, I have a bunch of old game systems. I love retro games, and I don't play them very often. You know, it's kind of like the fit has to catch me, and then I'll plug it in and all this. And, you know, I just want to say this, man. Like, it just represents an incredibly huge missed opportunity. I know this is my thing. Like, what are these companies doing? I've been talking about MTGO missing their opportunity, DC Comics missing their opportunity, Nintendo, and this virtual console. What are you doing? How hard is this? Again, you could have, I mean, because look, they've had the virtual console on the Wii and Wii U, and basically it just ends up being a bunch of ROMs that you can buy for $10 a pop or whatever.
Yeah.
And why is this not a service? Why are you not making it a service? Because you would kill on this. And some of this stuff, and by the way, I mean, like, archiving games and all this has become a real art. But there is that window of time where certain systems, like, they're just lost, man. There's just stuff that you have a difficult time getting, or you can't get on a service. And that's almost the entirety of the Saturn catalog, right?
Mm-hmm.
I do not have Panzer Dragoon Saga, but I have Panzer Dragoon 1 and 2. Saga, I looked up just on a whim. It's $700 to buy on eBay.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Right? And it's like, I just wanted to check it out. You know, but it's like it's a role playing game. I don't think it ever got published in the States, but it exists in English, whatever. But man, what a terrible thing to be like, hey, you know, I want to relive this experience from my childhood and play the Sega Saturn. And hey, look up a game, $700. Terrible. Anyway, that's me. So Cameron, if someone would like to send you some DC comic recommendations, talk to you about V-Nex or the appropriate color of blue for this time of year, where could they find you?
They can do that all on Twitter, @Cameron_McCoy.
And I am @CurtisNow. Our official show feed is @SpikeFeedMTG. We will check you guys next week.